from the inside pocket of his coat and handed it to her. "This was given to me by your aunt some months before her death, Miss Neal." Cassie looked at her name scrawled across the envelope in what she recognized as her aunt's hand, and then looked inquiringly at the lawyer. "And it was somehow forgotten during probate." "That's quite all right, Mr. McDaniel. I'm sure it's just a personal letter I probably wouldn't have read until now anyway, so no harm done."
"Indeed, she assured me it was a personal message for you, but..."
Mr. McDaniel shook his head.
"I'm afraid there has been harm, Miss Neal, although I don't know..."
He drew a breath.
"Your aunt gave me the envelope with very specific instructions, and I gave her my word I would obey those instructions."
"Which were?"
"To place the envelope in your hands on the 12th of February of this year."
Cassie blinked.
"I see. That would have been about 2 weeks ago."
"Hence my failure. Miss Neal, I am so sorry. As you know, your aunt was one of my last clients, taken on at her insistence, even though I was on the point of retiring when she came to me and asked that I handle her will and estate planning. In the last year, I've been gradually closing out my offices, and I'm afraid your aunt's envelope and the instructions simply got lost in the shuffle."
He sighed.
"My memory isn't what it once was, and I'm afraid I completely forgot about it."
She knew he was deeply upset by his failure, and quickly said,
"It could have happened to anyone, Mr. McDaniel. Please don't worry about it. I'm sure my aunt wouldn't be at all upset. It's only a 2-week delay, after all. What could that matter?"
"I'm afraid it may matter very much, Miss Neal, although I can't, of course, know how. Miss Melton assured me that there was nothing of legal significance in the envelope, only a personal message for you. But she was most insistent that it be delivered on the 12th of February, not before and not after. The date seemed highly significant to her, and perhaps to you."
Cassie eyed him consideringly.
"She told you that? That the date would mean something to me?"
"Not precisely."
He was uncomfortable.
"But I was aware that Miss Melton occasionally knew things. Her intensity convinced me that her message to you might be in the nature of advice or even a warning of some kind."
"I wouldn't have said you were the type of man who'd believe in things like that," Cassie said.
"Normally I'm not. But she... Really, Miss Neal, she seemed quite desperate. I'm afraid the message was terribly important to her."
"Well, why don't I..."
As Cassie went to open the envelope, McDaniel's outstretched hand stopped her.
"Your aunt wished you to read it when you were alone, Miss Neal. She was quite specific about that instruction."
Cassie didn't know whether to be amused or worried, but the latter emotion was beginning to take precedence.
"I see. Well, then, that's what I'll do. Did she leave any further instructions?"
"Not with me," McDaniel replied. "I am so sorry, Miss Neal."
He began to back away.
"I'll let myself out."
Cassie found herself staring at empty space and blinked when the closing of the front door was followed quickly by the sound of a car engine starting. For an older gentleman, he could move when he wanted to. She sat down on the sofa and stared at the envelope.
"What do you think, Max?
Is it a case of better late than never? Or should I throw this into the fire unread?" Max quaffed softly and thumped his tail against the floor.
"The 12th of February. 2 weeks ago. What was I doing about 2 weeks?"
What she had been doing was coping with the sudden, terrible knowledge that a killer was stalking his first victim in this sleepy little town. With fingers that had turned numb, Cassie tore open the envelope and unfolded a single sheet of notepaper. The message sprawled across it was brief and to the point.
"Cassie,
whatever happens, stay away from Ben Ryan. He'll destroy you. Alex."
Chapter 13. It should have been simple. Cassie hadn't seen or spoken to her aunt for more than 25 years. In fact, she barely remembered her. There had been no birthday or Christmas cards, and not even the notification of her sister's violent death had compelled Alex Melton to contact her niece. Only after her own death, in the shape of her will and now this message, did Cassie hear from her aunt. It should have been a simple decision to ignore this warning. But it wasn't. As voices from the dead went, Alex Melton's was as eerie and as terrifying as anything Cassie could have imagined, and as badly as she wanted to, she couldn't ignore it. "He'll destroy you." Alex Melton had been desperate that her niece receive this warning, her attorney said, and he was not a man to use such words lightly. She had been desperate enough to leave the warning with very specific instructions that it be delivered on a precise day. The very day that Ben Ryan's name had occurred to Cassie as a possible ally in her attempt to convince Sheriff Dunbar that a killer was about to strike. If Cassie had received the warning, then what? She thought she probably would have reconsidered her idea of going to see him. She had been so wary of getting involved once again in a murder investigation, so reluctant to put herself through it all once again. It wouldn't have taken much to make her withdraw into her quiet, peaceful isolation. Guilty conscience partly absolved, because she had, after all, tried to warn the sheriff. But now? 2 weeks had changed so many things. The killer had struck 3 times, and she knew he was about to strike again. The sheriff was willing to listen now, maybe even to believe in what she could tell him, and that might make a difference. And she was committed now, determined to try her best to help catch the killer. And there was Ben. Ben, who wanted her. Ben, who made her feel things she had never felt before and wanted so badly to feel again. Ben, who could touch her without threatening her walls. "He'll destroy you." Ben destroy her? How? Someone unfamiliar with psychics and their abilities would have immediately thought of the killer terrorizing this town and assumed that either Ben was the killer or that her involvement with him would somehow deliver her into the hands of the killer. But Cassie knew Ben was not the killer. Even more, she knew that her aunt's choice of words was important. If Alex had seen her niece's death, she would have used that word. But she hadn't. "He'll destroy you." Not kill her, or cause her to be killed. Destroy her. And in that word lay a wealth of frightening possibilities. Because there were fates worse than death. Much worse. "I didn't see him," she murmured to Max. "When I saw my fate, I didn't see Ben. He won't be part of that. Won't cause it to happen, surely." What she had seen had been a jumble of images and emotions, leaving her with only the certainty that the abilities she had lived with since childhood would be her doom, that she would, in stealing the shadows of yet another dangerously insane mind, become lost herself in the terrible, hungry darkness of that lunatic consciousness, lost forever. Death would be simple. And preferable, by comparison. "He'll destroy you. Destroy you. Destroy." For a long time, Cassie sat staring at the note, her eyes skimming the words again and again, her brain trying to take in all the implications. She felt colder than she had that morning. She felt more alone than she had since she had first run to this place looking for peace. Her aunt had certainly not feared that she would get her heart broken. Rejection by a lover, while destructive, seldom destroyed. And yet, somehow, in some way, Alex had been convinced that unless she stayed away from him, Ben would destroy her. "Damn it, Alex, why didn't you explain?" she murmured. But even as the words left her lips, Cassie knew the answer. Predicting the future was a tricky business. And more often than not, the worst thing a psychic could do was offer explicit details, even if she was sure of them. Precognitive visions tended to be shrouded in symbolism, with interpretation uncertain and conclusions risky. Alex could have known, with absolute certainty, that Ben Ryan had the ability or potential to destroy her niece, without being at all sure how that could or would come about. So the simplest and most direct warning was the safest. Stay away from him. He'll destroy you. Too late, Cassie said to her aunt, and to herself. Whatever is meant to happen will happen. Running 3,000 miles hadn't changed that. This warning wouldn't change that. She turned her head and gazed at the box full of papers that had been sitting in a nearby chair for days now, waiting for her attention. She had avoided the task, just as she had avoided reading her aunt's journals. She had kept herself distant from her aunt's personality whenever possible, preferring not to know about the woman who had quarreled so bitterly with her sister that they had never spoken again. Alex Melton's silence upon being notified of her sister's murder had hurt Cassie deeply. And yet, despite her own unwillingness to remain ignorant of who Alexandra Melton had been, her aunt's personality had refused to remain a mystery, because she had left clues behind, and because other people had spoken of her. Evidence such as all the unopened craft kits Alex had bought from Jill, the purchases obviously used as excuses for visits, indicated a surprising shyness. Her warning to Abby, reluctant and troubled, was clear evidence to Cassie both of her aunt's sense of responsibility and her reluctance to meddle in others' lives. There had been other indications of personality during the months Cassie had spent in her aunt's home. From the way she had decorated and the books she had read to her extensive collection of movies on videotape, a passion Cassie shared, Alex Melton's taste and preferences had gradually seeped into Cassie's awareness. Yet she still had no idea why her mother and aunt had quarreled. She had no idea if Alex had left her this house and property only because she was the sole survivor of the family, or if some other reason had prompted the bequest. And she had no idea how to interpret a specific and yet enigmatic warning delivered from beyond the grave. Gazing at the box filled with papers that might hold some vital clue in understanding her aunt's warning, Cassie wondered if her own reluctance to know Alex Melton might prove more costly than she could ever have imagined. She got up from the sofa, went to the fireplace, and looked down at the note and envelope in her hand. Her hesitation was a brief one. She tossed them into the fire and watched them burn. Then she got the box filled with her aunt's papers and began trying to understand a life. All right, Larry Ramsey said as he escorted the girls into the mall. We're here. He adopted the long-suffering tone common to put upon males who would much rather be somewhere else, preferably tinkering with an engine. I really appreciate this, Larry, Sue said, not quite batting her eyes. No problem, he said politely. It's just that I really do need to check about that software program today, so I'll have the weekend to work on the project, so I'm really grateful. Deanna stifled a giggle. Though Larry appeared oblivious, perhaps not unexpectedly since he was 10 years older, it was no secret to Deanna that her best friend had a crush on her brother. She was mildly interested on most days, but today had her mind most definitely on her own troubles. It's okay, Larry said, only his sister hearing the touch of impatience in his voice. Radio Shack is... Sue, didn't you say you saw the program at the computer store at the other end of the mall? Deanna asked quickly. Oh, yeah, I did see it there, Sue agreed obediently. Then let's go. Larry gestured for the girls to precede him, but stuck close as they joined the other brave souls who had ventured out to the mall. Deanna glanced surreptitiously at her watch. 3:30. She still had a few minutes. She hoped the computer store was as crowded as it usually was. It would be much easier for her to slip away for a few minutes if that was the case. Even though Larry tended to get absorbed in computer stuff, and even though Sue had promised to ask his advice about that program she was considering, Deanna knew her absence would be much less likely to be noticed if the store was busy. And there was that little alcove between the store and one of the exits, which was perfect. Just perfect. Hannah Payne knew it probably wasn't smart to go to the mall by herself, after promising Joe she wouldn't stir outside the house alone, and it took her some time to talk herself into it. But in the end, boredom and necessity won out over caution. Since he hadn't gotten into bed until after their morning trip to the grocery store, Joe would sleep until nearly supper time. Hannah was expecting a long and dreary afternoon to stretch out before her. Besides, the worries and what-ifs that were frightening in the wee hours of the night, when a body was alone in the house and jumping at shadows, looked absurd in the bright light of day, with the world awake and going about its business as usual. And anyway, when they were out earlier, she'd forgotten she needed to pick up some material she'd ordered from the fabric store at the mall. Hannah was a seamstress, talented enough to make a nice living at it, and she had lately tried her hand at designing a few outfits for one of the stores in town. The interest in her work was promising, and she wanted to get a few more things made as quickly as possible, so she needed that material. She probably should have taken Beeson with her, but the dog was an uneasy traveler and prone to bark constantly if left in the car by himself, so she went alone. She left Joe a note explaining where she was going, just in case he woke up while she was gone, and she locked the car doors and kept an alert eye out for strangers. But she encountered no strangers, and nothing suspicious, arriving at the mall without incident. It was just past 3:30 when she parked her car as close as possible to the main entrance and went in. Canned music blared from the speakers, seemingly louder than usual because the crowds were thinner and quieter than usual, and everybody was visibly nervous. The sight amused him. The shoppers spoke to one another warily, if at all, their gazes suspicious. Children were kept close to their mothers' sides, and it was plainly apparent that both more husbands and fewer teenagers were present at the mall than was usual on a Friday afternoon. But she was here, and that was all that really mattered. Ben drove his Jeep out to Cassie's place, while Matt arrived separately in his cruiser. The sheriff hadn't blinked when Ben made the suggestion, and he hadn't protested. Ben had an uneasy feeling that his own voice had been a bit forceful, perhaps even defiant, and that Matt understood all too well where Ben's motives lay. It was a hell of a thing when a man with walls so thick that a psychic couldn't see past them still managed to wear his hopes on his sleeve. Hopes he didn't want to think too much about. He was beginning to think he was obsessed with Cassie, and that bothered him a great deal. He had always been able to take relationships lightly, be casual about a physical need that had never really touched his emotions. But it was different with Cassie. The physical need was there, certainly, but it was more than matched by a riot of emotions he hardly knew how to deal with. It was simpler to just try to ignore them, at least for the present. Cassie greeted them at the front door, the alert dog, as usual, at her side. She was smiling faintly, and her voice was calm, but Ben knew immediately that she was even further away from him than she had been before they'd talked that morning. She was shut inside herself, remote, and when her gaze rested on him briefly, he didn't feel a warm hand, or even a cool one. Second thoughts? Or something else? With Matt close behind him as they went into the living room, Ben could hardly ask. Instead, looking at the neat stacks of papers on the coffee table, and remembering what she had said about her plans to go through her aunt's papers, he said, "You've been busy." Cassie gave the dog a soft command to lie down, and he did, on what was obviously his rug near the fireplace. If she was aware of tension in Ben's voice, it wasn't apparent in her own serene reply. I thought it was time to get this done. I even started reading one of Aunt Alex's journals.
Did she say why she scared the hell out of Abby? Matt demanded.
Cassie looked at him. So she told you?
Yes, she told me.
And?
And what? Do I believe your aunt saw the future? No, I don't. Do I believe Abby could be in danger? Yes, I do. Aside from this maniac we have running around, Gary Montgomery is a sadistic son of a bitch who's convinced Abby belongs to him and who is entirely likely to commit a violent act against her if he gets the chance.
Ben glanced at him but didn't comment. Cassie said, I'm glad she told you. As for Aunt Alex, so far I haven't even reached her move out here. The first journal starts more than 30 years ago.
Skip ahead, Matt advised.
Sorry. I'm one of those people who finds it physically impossible to skip ahead when reading a story. And this is quite a story.
She shook her head.
In any case, I doubt she'll explain in her journal why she told Abby what she did. She just wanted to warn her, Matt. That's all. Because she thought Abby could do something to change her own future if she knew what to expect.
There was a grim set to Matt's jaw. Maybe.
Cassie looked at him a moment. The coffee's hot, if either of you...
Matt shook his head, and Ben said no thanks.
All right. Then why don't I try again to reach the killer?
It wasn't a question, but Ben felt a strong urge to protest. He didn't like Cassie's remoteness, and he didn't like the fact that too many people in the town suspected that Alexandra Melton's niece was involved in the investigation. I don't think this is a good idea, he said.
Cassie gestured for them to sit, taking for herself a chair at right angles to the sofa.
Why not? She asked mildly.
Ben glanced at Matt, then sat at the end of the sofa nearest Cassie, while the sheriff took the other chair.
Because people are beginning to talk, Cassie. And they know your name.
She didn't change expression. Well, we expected that. All the more reason for me to try again. If he doesn't already know about me, he will soon. It was Matt who said,
And when he does know about you, will he be able to block you when you try to contact him?
Cassie shrugged. I don't know. There have been a few in the past who were able to sense it when I tried to touch their minds, and one or two were able to block me, at least partially. If he finds out about me, he could try that, although keeping those blocks in place continually will be all but impossible. Sooner or later, I'll be able to get in.
And then?
Ben was gazing at her steadily.
He'll be able to follow the trail back to you, won't he? He'll be able to reach into your mind.
Maybe. But even if he can do that, he doesn't kill with his mind.
Are you sure of that? Ben demanded.
Cassie returned his stare for a moment, then looked at Matt. Correct me if I'm wrong, but so far you have no evidence pointing to the identity of the killer.
You're not wrong, Matt said.
And I assume you're not willing to bet the lives of your fellow citizens on the hope that the killer has decided to abandon this nasty little habit of his.
My mama might have raised a stubborn man, but she didn't raise a fool.
Then I say the risk is an acceptable one.
Cassie...
Ben started to protest. And it's my risk. She looked steadily at him. In 10 years of working with the police, the only killer ever to backtrack and identify me telepathically was the man who killed my mother. He's dead.
But he came after you.
Physically. Just as this one might whenever he finds out who I am. That threat exists, no matter what I do. Especially if people in town are beginning to talk about me. So I'd just as soon try to figure out who he is before he has time to come looking for me. Put that way, Ben could hardly object. But he was still uneasy, more so with every passing minute. Taking his silence for assent, Cassie sat back in her chair, getting comfortable. She closed her eyes. It shouldn't take nearly as long to reach him this time. I know the way now. Her voice faded on the last words. Ben allowed several beats of silence to pass, watching that still, pale face. All it took to alert him was a flicker behind her eyelids. Cassie, tell me what you see. A slight frown drew her brows together, and her lips parted on an indrawn breath. He's walking. There are people all around him.
Where is he, Cassie?
Stores. A fountain.
Jesus, Matt said. The mall. Cassie, what is he doing? Is he just shopping? Is that why he's there? Or...
He has a hand in his pocket. He's fingering the garrote. He's looking for...
Matt was about to reach for his walkie-talkie, but froze suddenly, his gaze riveted to Cassie's face.
Jesus, he repeated, softly this time.
Her eyes were open. She stared straight ahead, unblinking, blind to everything except the telepathic view from a killer's eyes. And her pupils were dilated, so enormous that only a thin ring of pale gray showed around them, like ice rimming two holes into nothing. Ben felt a jolt of pure fear. At that moment, he believed, as he never had before, that Cassie was no longer in the room. She was somewhere else, and where she was dark and cold and crazy. And only the thinnest and most fragile of ties kept her anchored to the body, awaiting her return. Abby glanced at her watch, and seeing that it was nearly 4, quickened her pace. Shopping was taking longer than she had expected. Poor Bryce was waiting in the car, no doubt, impatiently, and though the rawhide chew toys she had brought him would atone for temporary abandonment, she didn't want to stay away any longer. Besides, it would be dark soon, and even with the powerful lights in the parking lot, she didn't want to walk out there after darkness fell. Just one more quick stop, and then she could go. Max got up from the rug near the fire where he'd quietly lain all this time, and came to sit near Cassie's chair. His eyes were fixed on her, and he whined softly. Every inch of his body spoke of tension and worry.
Cassie.
Ben's voice was hoarse, and he cleared his throat.
Cassie. Talk to me. Where are you?
Her head moved very slightly, as if in response to his voice, but she never blinked or showed any expression, and her voice remained flat and totally without emotion.
I'm in him. He's excited. His heart is pounding. There's so much danger taking her here. But he likes that. He likes the challenge, the anticipation.
Matt hesitated, one hand on his walkie-talkie.
Ben, I need a description, he said softly. If I send my people in there in force, we'll cause a panic. He'll be able to disappear in the mess.
Ben nodded.
Cassie, is he looking toward any of the stores? Is there a reflection?
Her brows drew together again, but those wide, empty eyes never changed.
Just glimpses. Distorted. I think he has on a blue jacket, like a team jacket. There's a white letter, I think. Maybe an R.
Ben glanced at Matt, reading the sheriff's dismay even as he felt his own. The largest and oldest of the three county high schools boasted blue team jackets with white lettering, and they were so commonly seen in the area, it was something of a joke. Hundreds of male students, past and present, wore the damned things. Ben had one himself, packed away in a trunk out at the old house.
Cassie. Can you see anything else? What color is his hair?
He's wearing a hat, I think. A baseball cap.
Yet another common sight in the area. Ben wanted to swear violently, but forced himself to stay steady. He didn't like the growing pallor of Cassie's face, or her utter stillness, sensing, more than seeing, that she was losing strength with every minute that passed. We need to know what he looks like, Cassie. Can you help us know that?
She was silent for a moment. I don't think... He isn't looking at the stores any longer. Just straight ahead, because... Oh. He's getting more excited. It's filling his mind, all his plans for her. He has a safe place he can take her, so nobody will hear her. And it's all ready for them. He wants to make her strip for him first so he can watch. And then...
Cassie, who is he thinking about? Who is she?
The bitch.
What's her name, Cassie?
Bitches don't have names. That assertion was particularly chilling, delivered in her soft, toneless voice, but not nearly as chilling as her next words. Bitches are only good for fucking and for killing.
Cassie.
Especially for killing. I like to see them bleed. It's nearly 4, Sue hissed to her best friend. If you're going to do something, do it now. You just hold Larry's attention for a few minutes,
Deanna murmured in response, and wandered one row over to gaze at a fine display of modems. Obedient, Sue carried the computer program she was considering over to where Larry stood near the door. Within 5 minutes, he was returning to the software display with her, shaking his head at her ignorance. Giggling, Deanna slipped out of the store. Cassie, listen to me. Are you listening? Pull back. Pull back, Cassie.
It wasn't something she had warned him about, but Ben knew instinctively that if her voice had merged with the killer's until they spoke as one, then she was definitely in too deep.
You could never become a monster.
I could lose myself in one. What would be the difference?
Jesus Christ.
I like to see them...
Cassie, pull back. Do it. Now.
There was an instant of silence, and then she said, All right. He's still walking, but faster now. I think he knows where she is. Ben was only vaguely aware of Matt on his walkie-talkie, sending his officers to every exit of the mall. All his concentration was focused on Cassie. He had the terrifying notion that if he so much as looked away from her, he would lose her forever.
Cassie, where is he now? Can you tell us?
He just passed the food court.
Going which way?
I don't know.
Cassie.
I don't know. I've never been there before.
Exhaustion was beginning to drag at every word.
Ben kept his voice calm.
Try to see the name of one of the stores, Cassie. Can you see?
There's a shoe store beside a music store, and across is a bookstore.
Matt, he's heading toward the north end, Ben said to the sheriff, without taking his eyes from her. Cassie.
I'm still here, she said distantly. His feet are hurting. His boots are too tight. Isn't that funny?
Cassie, is he watching anyone?
No, she's... He knows where she'll be.
Is he thinking about it? Where she'll be?
No, he's just...
Cassie's voice broke off abruptly. She didn't even seem to be breathing. Then her eyes closed. Her head jerked as though she'd been slapped, and a cry of pain escaped her. Chapter 14. Hannah Payne glanced at her watch and swore beneath her breath when she saw it was almost 4 o'clock. She'd tried to hurry, but Connie would insist on talking to her in detail about every piece of material as she cut it. And now just look at the time. If she didn't get a move on, there was no way she'd have time to get Joe's supper fixed and on the table by the time he woke up. Her arms full of material, and mind filled with the pros and cons of various excuses, Hannah took her usual shortcut past several boarded-up stores currently being remodeled, and headed for one of the lesser-used exits that only a former employee of one of the stores in the mall would know about. Her summer job had been at the food court. All too conscious of time passing, Hannah was hurrying when she rounded a corner, which was why she didn't see him until she literally ran into him. "Hello," he drawled. "Cassie. Cassie." Ben was on the point of grabbing her and shaking her when she finally lifted her head and opened her eyes. The pupils were normal once more, but he thought he had never seen such weariness. "What happened?" he asked, quieter now, hardly aware that he was on one knee by her chair. "He pushed me out," Cassie whispered. "What?" "He knows who I am." Ben reached for her hand and found it icy. He rubbed it between his.
"Are you sure?"
She leaned her head back against the chair, gazing at him without expression. "I don't know how, but..." He realized I was with him. He was so quick, and I couldn't hide myself. I heard him. He thought my name, just as he pushed me out of his mind.
"Christ," Ben muttered.
Matt was on his feet. "Cassie, is there anything else you can tell me about him? My people will be covering all the mall exits within 10 minutes, but telling them to stop any male wearing a central hijacket is just too vague, even if we narrow it to males accompanied by females. Is there anything else you can tell me? Anything at all?"
Cassie looked at him with those exhausted eyes and said, "I think they're already too late."
Deanna Ramsey turned with a welcoming smile that rapidly died.
"Oh, it's you. Do you want something?"
"Funny you should ask," he replied.
"You didn't have to stay," Cassie said. She sipped the hot coffee Ben had given her and eyed him over the rim of the cup. "I'll be all right."
"You're welcome," he said.
She didn't smile. With an afghan wrapped around her and the hot coffee inside her, she was warmer than she had been, but she was so drained, she just wanted to curl up and sleep. And please God, not dream.
"Matt could probably use your help," she told Ben.
"Matt has 24 deputies and all the mall security out there helping him. I'd just get in his way."
He paused.
"I'm not going anywhere, Cassie."
She drew a breath and concentrated on forming the words.
"I need to sleep about 12 hours.
"All right."
He put his cup down and reached for hers, and put it also on the coffee table, then came to her and lifted her out of her chair, afghan and all. "What are you..."
"You could never manage the stairs," he told her,
managing them easily, even bearing her weight. Cassie's thinking was fuzzy, but she decided that she didn't like being carried by a man when she was too damn tired to enjoy the experience. But all she said was,
"Why can't you just leave me alone?"
"Which bedroom?" he asked,
apparently unmoved by her shaky question. Cassie sighed and rested her head on his shoulder.
The big front one. I have to take Max out.
I'll take him out. Don't worry.
He needs to be fed.
I said don't worry, Cassie. About anything. Just sleep.
Already half there, she murmured. Yes, but you can't spend the night here. What would people say?
Go to sleep, love.
She tried to say that he shouldn't call her love, and he certainly shouldn't spend the night in her house. But the only thing that emerged was a sensual little murmur that would have embarrassed her if she'd been able to think about it. But thinking was beyond her. Her eyes had closed, and when she felt the softness of her bed beneath her, Cassie just sighed and let go, falling into sleep as though into a deep well. Ben removed her shoes and used the afghan as an extra blanket when he covered her. He turned on the lamp on her nightstand, since it was getting dark, but left the light low. She was deeply asleep already, her fragile body completely limp, and for a moment he stood beside her bed and just gazed down on her. How many more of these dreadful psychic journeys could she take before they destroyed her? Not many. He had known the attempts drained her energy and strength, but until that day, he hadn't known they also consumed her very life force. And he hadn't known that the possibility of losing her forever would be a knife in his heart. He heard a quiet sound and turned his head to find Max standing in the doorway, staring at him with anxious eyes. Ben sent a last look at Cassie and then went to the dog and nudged him into the hallway so he could draw the door almost closed. "Come on, boy," he said. "Let's go downstairs and leave her in peace." At least, whatever peace she could find in her dreams. "Any luck?" Ben asked the sheriff when Matt was called to his cruiser's phone. "Yeah. And all bad. We got a missing girl, Ben." "Who is it?" "A teenager named Deanna Ramsey. She came to the mall with a friend, and they were escorted by her older brother. The friend is hysterical, but from what I've been able to get out of her, it seems Deanna talked her friend into distracting her brother so she could slip away. She intended to meet someone, the friend claims, but she doesn't know who. The brother swears she couldn't have gone missing more than 10 minutes before we got here. We're searching the place, and we've searched every male in the right age group, with or without a central jacket." Matt paused, then added flatly, "Nothing." Sitting on Cassie's sofa with her dog's head in his lap, Ben stared at the leaping flames in the fireplace and tried to think of something positive to say. Nothing came to mind. "Shit," he said finally. "My sentiments exactly." Matt sounded too tired to swear. "My deputies are going to keep searching the area, and we've got a growing group of volunteers standing by if we have to start beating the bushes around here. I've called John Logan, and he's on his way out here with his dogs. The girl left a pair of gloves in her brother's car, so we'll have her sent. But I'm betting the bastard got her into a vehicle of some kind, so the trail will end a few yards from one of the exits." He drew a breath. "Nobody saw anything unusual. Nobody heard anything unusual. I'm about to head out to the Ramsey place with Larry, break the news to their parents. If they haven't heard already." Matt grunted in agreement. "How's Cassie?" "Asleep. Or maybe I should say unconscious. She said she needed about 12 hours, but I'll be surprised if she wakes up before late tomorrow morning. You staying out there tonight?" "Yes." Matt didn't comment, saying merely, "Okay. I'll call you there if I have any news tonight or in the morning." "If you need my help." "No, we've got enough eyes for a search. There's nothing you can do here." Grimly, he added, "So far this bastard's been leaving his bodies where we can find them quickly. But if Cassie was right about his plans for this one, we may be in for a long wait." Ben finished. "Yeah.
And in the meantime, I don't much like the mood of our volunteers, Ben. We've had to disarm more than half of them already. If we have to use them to search, and if that girl's body is found, I'm going to have a mob on my hands. I know. And now Eric is threatening to put out a special edition of the paper tomorrow, and I just can't make him see it'll only fan the flames. I'll call him. Yeah, okay. Matt let out a weary breath. And I'll call you if there's any news. Watch your step, Matt. I will. Matt hung up the phone and backed away to close the cruiser's door, then looked at Abby, where she leaned against the rear fender with her dog at her side. Before Matt could speak, she did. I should go home. Her gaze moved restlessly over the people milling all around the parking lot, where lights were beginning to flicker on as darkness rapidly approached. There were plenty of uniformed sheriff's deputies coming and going from the mall and questioning people in the parking lot. But there were even more concerned citizens just standing around, taking it all in. You have work to do, and I'm just in the way. Matt stepped closer, not touching her even though he wanted to. He had gone cold to his bones when he had seen her among the mall shoppers and realized how close she had been to an insane killer. You could never be in the way. He knew why she was worried, of course, and her next words confirmed it. Matt, if somebody sees me just hanging around you and starts to wonder... Roughly, he said, I don't want to let you out of my sight. Her tense expression softened. I'll be fine. I'll take Bryce home and we'll lock ourselves in the house and wait for you. He didn't like it, but knew he didn't have much choice. All right. Because he couldn't help himself, he lifted a hand to touch her cheek briefly. But for God's sake, be careful. I will. You too. Matt watched her all the way to her car, and it wasn't until she drove past him and lifted a hand in farewell that he turned back to his duties, reluctantly pushing her out of his thoughts. Unseen by either of them, Gary Montgomery sat in his car gripping the steering wheel with white-knuckled fingers and watched his wife drive away. Then he turned his gaze to the sheriff busily directing his men. Son of a bitch, he muttered. Son of a bitch! I'm glad I scared you, Joe Mooney declared stolidly, escorting Hannah to her car. Jesus, Hannah, you weren't even looking where you were going. I was in a hurry. She knew only too well that this time she wouldn't be able to defend her actions. That poor girl, snatched from the mall in broad daylight, and the monster that took her might well have passed Hannah only minutes before. She shivered. I don't know what I'm going to do with you, Joe said. Hannah suddenly felt like crying. Can you stay home tonight, Joe? Please? He gazed down at her as they reached her car. Even though he knew the third shift at the plant would be short a number of workers on this night, as more than one man stayed home, he said, I've got a sick day coming. Get in the car, honey, and I'll follow you back to the house. Hannah threw her arms around his neck, scattering fabric all over the pavement. As Matt had predicted, John Logan's bloodhounds could follow a trail only a few yards from one of the mall exits, where Deanna Ramsey's abductor had obviously forced her into a waiting car. The mall property had been thoroughly searched, and with the girl's trail vanishing into thin air, there was nothing for the sheriff to do but disband the waiting group of volunteer searchers and send his officers out to patrol the town in the hope of seeing something, anything, suspicious. The volunteers were reluctant to go, even with Matt's assurances that he'd call them if it was decided a search was in order for the following day.
There was a great deal of grumbling and growling from the group, and Matt was careful to make sure that they did indeed disperse and go their separate ways before he and most of his officers also left the mall. The officers scattered, some to return to the office, but most to begin patrolling. Matt's mercifully brief trip out to the Ramsey place had dashed his faint hopes that the girl had somehow gotten herself safely home. He had left a couple of his people gathering the names and numbers of Deanna's friends from her stricken parents, so that every possible avenue of information could be followed. He didn't expect it to help. Deanna Ramsey had been abducted by a monster smart enough not to leave a trail, and the next they knew of him would undoubtedly be when her body was found. Her raped and tortured body, if Cassie was right. Her demonstration that day had very definitely given him pause. Even a skeptic would have been forced to say that she had been in the grip of something extraordinary, and he doubted he would ever forget that horrifying emptiness he had seen in her unseeing eyes. He wondered if Ben had any idea what he was getting himself into. The station was quiet, with so many of his deputies out questioning Deanna's friends and looking for some hint of where her abductor had taken her, and Matt welcomed the relative silence. He needed to think. He went into his office and closed the door. He called Abby first to make sure she had arrived home safely and that she was securely locked inside, and told her that if he could get to her place tonight, it would be before midnight. If he wasn't there by then, he wouldn't be coming tonight. As always, Abby understood. Matt spent the next hour and more at his desk, going over every note and report concerning the three murders. He looked at photographs, studied the coins and the knives found at the scene, read every last detail of the autopsies. When he finished, he was no closer to knowing who had killed the three women and apparently abducted Deanna Ramsey. A knock at his door interrupted his brooding, for which he was grateful, and he looked up to find one of his deputies, Sharon Watkins, looking at him questioningly. "What is it, Sharon? Any news?"
"Not about the Ramsey girl, no," she replied.
"I'm afraid to ask what else has happened."
"Nothing that I know of. There's someone here to see you, Sheriff. He doesn't have an appointment, but I think you'll want to see him."
"This can't be good," Matt muttered.
"It isn't." Her expression told him she was glad it was his problem rather than hers. Matt gave her a wry smile.
"All right. Send him in."
He absently tidied the files on his desk and rose to his feet as Sharon showed the visitor into his office. And he didn't need to hear the man's introduction or see his badge to know exactly what he was looking at.
"Sheriff Dunbar, my name is Noah Bishop. I'm with the FBI.
He was a tall man, lean, but with the wide shoulders and athletic carriage that spoke of a great deal of physical strength. He had black hair boasting a rather dramatic widow's peak, piercing gray eyes, and a strikingly handsome face, marred by a jagged scar that ran from the corner of his left eye almost to the corner of his mouth. It was not a face that inspired comfort.
"Agent Bishop."
Matt gestured to a visitor's chair, then reclaimed his own.
"What can I do for the FBI?" "Relax, Sheriff," Bishop smiled. "I didn't come down here to stick my nose into your investigation."
His voice was cool, but matter-of-fact.
"No?"
"No. This is your jurisdiction. The FBI would be happy to offer its expertise, especially if you do indeed have a serial killer operating in the area. But we have learned in such situations as this that it's more politic to wait until we're invited."
"Glad to hear it."
If Matt's brevity disturbed the agent, it wasn't apparent.
"Then we understand each other."
Matt inclined his head.
Care to tell me how you heard about our little investigation?
The local newspaper.
Which you have delivered to you in Virginia?
Bishop smiled again. It was rather frightening.
I have access to certain computer databanks, including one in this state. Your local paper, like so many others, archives its issues for research and posterity. Once the phrase serial killer was used, it showed up on my system when I did a routine search for information.
The Internet, Matt said with ironic admiration. It's just wonderful.
It does tend to make secrecy difficult. Without waiting for a response to that provocative statement, Bishop went on calmly. As I said, Sheriff, the FBI would be happy to offer any aid or advice you might require. However, I'm not here primarily because of your investigation, but on a related matter.
Which is?
I'd like to talk to you about Cassandra Neal.
February 27th, 1999. When Cassie woke, it was with the leaden sensation of having slept a long, long time. She lay there for a while, not particularly concerned about anything, staring drowsily up at the ceiling. But then the niggling suspicion that she had slept in her clothes intruded, and she finally forced herself to sit up and push back the covers. Yes, she had slept in her clothes. Why on earth had she done that? The clock on her nightstand told her it was a bit after 9 in the morning. She was reasonably sure it was Saturday. And somebody was frying bacon in her kitchen. Bewilderment rather than anxiety was uppermost in Cassie's mind. It took her several minutes of careful thought to recall what had happened the previous afternoon. And when she did, she realized that Ben must indeed have stayed all night, after carrying her to bed and leaving her there. She pushed that realization away, and the covers with it, sliding stiffly out of bed and standing on the rug beside it for a moment as she automatically assessed her condition. Her thinking was still a bit fuzzy, her muscles, having obviously remained in one exhausted position all night, complained with every movement, and her growling stomach told her it had been too long since her last meal. But other than that, she felt surprisingly well. A long, hot shower took care of the stiff muscles and cleared her head, and by the time she was dressed and on her way downstairs, her head was clearer, and she felt ready to face just about anything, even a prosecuting attorney frying bacon in her kitchen. He had the table already set for two, and her portable radio was quietly playing oldies in the background. It was a cheerful, welcoming scene.
Good morning, he said when she came in. The coffee's hot.
Good morning. She headed for the coffee, desperately in need of caffeine and hoping it didn't show. Max, sprawled out near the back door with a rawhide treat between his front paws, thumped his tail in welcome, but didn't stop chewing. The honeymoon, Cassie decided, was definitely over.
I hope you don't mind, but I've made myself at home, Ben said casually and without looking at her.
How could I mind? She murmured.
I imagine you might.
His voice remained conversational.
Yesterday you told me to leave.
She vaguely recalled that. I told you to leave me alone. You did. He sent her a glance that was no less sharp for being brief.
How do you feel?
Better. Sleep usually helps.
Though not usually 16 hours worth.
Sipping her coffee, Cassie looked at Ben, noting both his ease in the kitchen and the fact that he had changed clothes since yesterday. Where had he slept?
Do you like pancakes?
He asked.
Say yes.
Yes. She went to get syrup and butter from the refrigerator, then poured orange juice for them both as he finished cooking. She wanted to ask him about the poor girl who'd been taken yesterday, but her mind shied away from it.
There was nothing she could do, she reminded herself fiercely. Not for that girl. Not now. She remained silent while Ben transferred the food to the table and they both sat down to eat. The silence between them stretched out for most of the meal. It didn't seem to bother Ben at all. Cassie was in no hurry to break it. She wasn't uncomfortable with him, though she was highly conscious of his every movement. She just didn't know what to say to him. They were nearly finished when she finally spoke. This is good. Thanks.
I specialize in breakfasts and steaks. Other than that...
He shrugged, smiling. She thought that expertise had probably taken him as far as he wanted it to, but didn't say it aloud. Instead, driven, she said, That girl...
They haven't found her yet.
I could...
No, Ben said. You couldn't.
I'm all right now.
Maybe.
He shook his head, watching her intently.
And maybe not. Do you remember it all, Cassie?
More or less.
Do you remember speaking in the first person, in the killer's words?
She felt a chill. No.
You did. I managed to pull you back, but...
He drew a breath.
Now I understand what you meant when you said you needed a lifeline.
Cassie didn't ask what, specifically, she had said. Instead, she shook her head and murmured, Every case is a bit different, but... I don't understand anything about this one. Peculiar things have been happening almost from the beginning. He hesitated.
Something else. Your eyes were open during most of the contact. That isn't usual, is it?
No.
Your pupils were so dilated, there was almost no color showing at all.
Cassie felt more disturbed by what she heard in his voice than by the anomalous occurrence he described. I can't explain it. The difference I felt was a matter of degree.
What do you mean?
I mean, the contact itself didn't feel different, just the depth of it. Almost instantly, I was deep in his mind, his consciousness, so quick it was like flipping a switch.
Because you knew the way after finding him the last time?
I guess. But that didn't feel right somehow, and she went on slowly. If I didn't know better, I'd swear he pulled me in. That he wanted me to know where he was and what he was doing. That he deliberately let me know that much before he pushed me out.
Why isn't that possible?
Well, because there was no awareness of me. None at all. Not until that very last second when he suddenly looked at me and then pushed me out.
You said he knew you.
Yes. He said my name in his mind.
Cassie.
She heard that whisper once again in her mind, and a shiver rippled through her. She had never before been caught like that in another mind. A dark inner eye had turned toward her with such swift accuracy that she had felt pinned in place, trapped. That was what she could never tell Ben. That she knew with utter certainty she would never have been able to escape from the insane strength of that other mind if he had not contemptuously thrown her free. Chapter 15.
Cassie.
She summoned a smile. As I said, he knows who I am now. But we expected that sooner or later.
Do you think he'll block you from now on?
He couldn't do it continually. Eventually, even the strongest mind gets tired or distracted and the guard slips. I'll be able to get back in.
And if you can, will he know you're there?
Cassie hesitated. I don't know. I've always been able to hide my presence before.
Must have been distracted somehow this time, and that's how he caught me.
What if he catches you again? Can he hurt you?
With his mind? She tried to make sure her voice didn't sound evasive. All he did this time was push me out. It's the natural thing to do.
We're dealing with an unnatural mind, Cassie.
Yes, I know. Ben stared at her, then pushed his plate away with a smothered oath. In a very steady voice, he said,
"Even if he can't hurt you, how many more times do you think you can do this without killing yourself?"
"As many as I have to." Cassie got up and carried her plate to the sink. He followed with his own plate.
"I don't think so, Cassie. Do you realize you scared the life out of me yesterday? I thought I was going to lose you forever."
She fixed a fresh cup of coffee to give herself a moment to think. It didn't help. "I'm sorry." Her own voice sounded more puzzled than apologetic to her. She wondered how it sounded to him.
Obviously not apologetic. "Damn it, Cassie. Stop acting like I shouldn't care if you put yourself in danger."
She poured milk into her coffee, stirring it with careful concentration. "It's my risk to take. I told you that."
"And I'm not concerned in the matter."
She took a moment to respond. "What do you want me to say, Ben?" He put his hands on her shoulders and turned her to face him.
"Look at me."
She did, but reluctantly. He gave her a little shake.
"Stop shutting me out."
"I'm not."
"You've been miles away from me since Matt and I came back yesterday afternoon. I want to know why. Is it because I told you how I felt? Are you having second thoughts about getting involved with me?"
"He'll destroy you." Cassie wondered if she could even try to save herself. "Ben, you must see, it's no good."
"Why?"
he demanded bluntly. "My God, aren't all the reasons obvious?"
"Not to me. So tell me."
She drew a breath. "For one thing, I'd make a lousy lover, Ben. I've been inside too many male minds filled with nothing but violence and hate. I can't just push all that aside, pretend I never saw it, that it never terrified me."
"You've never been in my mind," he said quietly.
"I know that." She steadied her voice with an effort. "And I know those other minds, those urges and actions are abnormal. Most men never feel such violence. But accepting that in my own mind doesn't help. I can't help being afraid. Don't you see? There's no trust left in me."
"I don't believe that."
"You have to. It's true."
"Cassie, I would never deliberately hurt you."
"I'm sure you mean that." She avoided his gaze.
"But you don't believe it's the truth."
"I told you, I can't trust anymore. I don't want to get involved, not with anyone. Ben, please, just let it go, okay?"
He ignored the plea. "Is it because you can't read me? Because you can't be sure there's no violence in me?"
"I don't know. Maybe." She had to wonder if it would make things easier if she could read Ben.
Or harder.
His fingers tightened on her shoulders.
"Cassie."
The telephone rang, making her jump, but she was glad to have a reason to move away from him, if only as far as the kitchen wall phone. She picked up the receiver and said hello, hoping she didn't sound as shaky as she thought she did.
"Cassie, it's Matt. Is Ben still there?"
"Yes. Hang on a second." She held out the receiver, and when he took it, immediately moved away and busied herself loading the dishwasher.
"Matt, have you found her?"
Ben kept his gaze on Cassie and shook his head when she looked up questioningly. Then he frowned as the sheriff continued to speak.
I don't know if that's such a good idea, Matt. We'll just feed the gossip if Cassie comes to your office openly. I know. Yes, I realize that, but...
He listened for a moment longer, then said,
All right. We're on our way.
He hung up the phone and directed all his attention at Cassie.
You heard. He wants to talk to us in his office. I don't know why he didn't want to tell me over the phone, but he was right when he pointed out that your involvement in the investigation is an open secret by now.
Cassie closed the dishwasher. I'll get my jacket. She kept her tone as indifferent as she could manage. Would you let Max out for a minute, please? I'd like to leave him in the house. Ben did as she asked without comment, and by the time she was ready to leave, so was he. He joined her at the front door, picking up a small leather bag she hadn't noticed sitting by the stairs. Cassie didn't ask, but he explained anyway.
Since my days in the circuit court, I've always carried a packed overnight bag with me in the Jeep. I never knew when I might have to spend a night away from home.
Cassie set the security system without comment, and they went out to his Jeep. The silence between them was not a comfortable one, and it was broken only once between her house and their arrival at the sheriff's department.
What can I do to teach you to trust me? Ben asked.
Cassie didn't tell him that if she hadn't already trusted him, she would never have been able to accept him as a lifeline. He'll destroy you. It was probably already too late, but she had to try. No matter how much it hurt. Nothing, she answered. Abby had listened to the radio all morning, but the local station reported hour by hour that the missing Ryan's Bluff teenager had not yet been found. The sheriff's department was asking that anyone with any knowledge or information please come forward, and in the meantime, urged everyone to remain calm. Deputies were out in force. Abby was restless. She hadn't talked to Matt since the previous evening, and had slept badly, yet she had been up with the chickens despite feeling tired and out of sorts. She had busied herself all morning by performing her usual weekend chores, but all the house cleaning and washing was done long before noon, and nothing else served to occupy her attention. The weather was dreary, cold and overcast, threatening some kind of precipitation all morning, and the last of the snow clung to spots here and there, as if inviting more to join it. The radio said the roads were clear, but followed that report by stating that the sheriff's department was asking everyone to stay off the roads unless they had to be out. Abby could imagine the calls Matt must be getting, from panicky citizens to furious merchants. No matter what he did, somebody would be unhappy with him, and if he couldn't quickly make the streets safe for everyone, she was worried about him. He hadn't bargained for this kind of situation, and nothing in his experience had prepared him for it. He was an intelligent man and a shrewd cop, and he wouldn't make many mistakes. But those he made would be out of the conviction that he knew what was best for the town. The problem was, in this situation, there was no best, no right answer for the town, except to catch a particularly brutal, undoubtedly insane killer. Abby went cold just thinking of Matt in that confrontation. Because he would be there, of course. If they were able to locate the killer, Matt would be the first through the door. Not because it was his job, but because it was his nature. The phone rang, and Abby went eagerly to answer it, hoping Matt had found a moment to call. She really needed to hear his voice. Hello? No one responded, but the line was not silent. Instead, there were sounds of breathing, faint but unmistakable. Hello? Abby repeated, unease growing. Is anybody there? Abby. Just that. Just her name whispered. Then a click, and the dial tone.
Ben felt as well as saw Cassie stiffen the moment she preceded him into Matt's office. But that was her only visible reaction as she looked at the man lounging against the filing cabinet beside the sheriff's desk. "Hello, Bishop," she said, calm. "Cassie." The well-dressed man with the sharp gray eyes smiled, an expression that didn't lend the slightest bit of charm to his scarred face. As Cassie settled into the visitor's chair farthest away from Bishop, Matt introduced Ben to the agent, his own feelings clear in the flatness of his voice. Ben wasn't dismayed to find an FBI agent in his town, but he was wary, though not for the same reason Matt was. "Agent Bishop," he said as they shook hands. "Judge Ryan." When Matt nodded toward the other visitor's chair, Ben took it. There was a leather sofa along the wall beside Bishop, and Ben wondered if the agent remained on his feet because he felt it gave him a tactical advantage. Matt said, "Agent Bishop found out about our situation here thanks to newspaper archives and a North Carolina database." "And came to offer his expertise?" "In a manner of speaking." Bishop said, "This isn't an official visit, Judge. As a matter of fact, I'm currently on a sabbatical." "I wasn't aware the Bureau offered its agents sabbaticals." "It's an uncommon practice. It might